Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's program. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question and answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing star and one on your touch-tone phone. You may withdraw yourself from the queue by pressing the pound key. Please note this call is being recorded. I will be standing by if you should need any assistance, and it's now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Ms. Dani Perry. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. Welcome, everyone. My name is Dani Perry, and I am the Associate Executive Director at the American College of Preventive Medicine. Thank you for participating in today's call, which will provide an in-depth look at the new Lifestyle Medicine Core Competency Program launching today. This is the first comprehensive evidence-based continuing medical education program that is designed to improve physician and clinician competencies in prescribing lifestyle and behavioral interventions to treat and prevent disease in patient populations. We'll hear more about the program and why it's so critical in today's healthcare landscape from our expert speakers. There will also be significant time for participants to ask questions. On today's call, we'll hear from Dr. Daniel Blumenthal, President of the American College of Preventive Medicine, Dr. David Katz, President of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, Dr. Liana Leonoff, past President of ACLM, former ACPM board member, and the project's director of faculty, Dr. Wayne Deisinger, past President of ACLM, current ACPM board member, former chair of preventive medicine at Loma Linda University and CEO of Lifestyle Medicine Solutions, and Dr. Dexter Cherney, chief medical director and executive director of global health and wellness at Cummins Corporation and president-elect of ACLM. At this time, I will transition the call to our first speaker, Dr. Daniel Blumenthal. Go ahead, Dan.
Thank you, Dani. As Dani indicated, I'm the president of the American College of Preventive Medicine, which is the organization that represents physicians who practice the specialty of preventive medicine and public health. ACPM was founded over 60 years ago, and together with the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, a newer organization, we developed the lifestyle medicine curriculum. So we're here today to talk about chronic disease, chronic diseases like diabetes, heart disease, and cancer. These are diseases that affect over half of all Americans. They cause 7 of every 10 deaths of Americans, and they cost our healthcare system about $2.5 trillion per year. That's trillion with a T, or about 85% of the total healthcare expenditures for our nation. Now, this is really a tragedy because we know how to prevent most of it, and it's still true that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. We know that as physicians, we should be guiding patients on prevention. We should make prevention a really central part of our practice, but most physicians, in fact, don't really know how to incorporate prevention into their practice. I'm sorry to say, and as a former medical school professor at Morehouse School of Medicine and at Emory University, I'm sorry to say that it's really not taught well in medical school generally. But that's where the lifestyle medicine curriculum comes in, and you'll hear more about it in a minute. But first, I wanted to mention a couple of new developments that make this focus on prevention particularly timely. There is, first of all, the Affordable Care Act, otherwise known as Obamacare. And under Obamacare, all recommended preventive services are now covered by insurance. So things like counseling patients on smoking cessation that usually weren't covered previously are covered now. And I know that I've heard from some of my colleagues in the past that we don't do things like counsel patients on smoking cessation because we don't get paid for it. So now they do get paid for it, and they don't have an excuse. And then, in addition, Medicare is undertaking new approaches to paying physicians, approaches that go by the names of things like MACRA and MIPS, which are fairly complicated, but they mean that Medicare is paying for value-based care, and preventive services are probably the most value-oriented services that can be provided, and so they are more and more going to be a focus of medical practices. So one other thing I'd like everybody to keep in mind that the same principles that apply to medical care delivered to patients one at a time in an office also apply to public health, where we care for communities and for populations of people. So for those of us in public health applying these principles that are important for individual patient care may also help us, for instance, reduce smoking or reduce obesity on a community-wide basis. So now I'd like to turn it over to Dr. David Katz, who is, as Danny mentioned, president of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine. Dr. Katz.
Thank you very much, Dan. I'm proud to join with you and address the topic, and greetings to everybody out there in the ether. And it is my honor today to represent the American College of Lifestyle Medicine. I'm a member, long active member in the American College of Preventive Medicine as well. And lifestyle medicine really represents a commitment to using lifestyle interventions to prevent disease, but also to treat and reverse it. And so these are parallel efforts. And in the few minutes that I have today, I really just want to make a case for a universal focus on lifestyle medicine. And it's an argument that begins about 23 years ago. It was 23 years ago that McGinnis and Fege published a seminal paper in the Journal of the American Medical Association called Actual Causes of Death in the United States. And I think that title was meant to rock us all back on our heels, and it certainly did that to me and really changed the trajectory of my career. Effectively, what they told us is that the causes of death we see on death certificates, they're the proximal causes of death. Someone dies of a heart attack, they have heart disease, but not the root causes. And they analyzed the root causes and found that virtually all of the premature deaths in our country every year were attributable to a list of 10 modifiable factors. And for our purposes here this afternoon, the crucial consideration is that list of 10 was predominated by lifestyle practices. Fully 80% of the premature deaths and that much of chronic disease in the U.S. and around the world was attributable to what I routinely call bad use of feet, forks, and fingers, lack of physical activity, suboptimal diets, and holding cigarettes and smoking them. And we can extend that list of lifestyle practices to other important elements: sleep, quality and quantity, managing our stress, cultivating strong social relationships. That's the beating heart of lifestyle as medicine. And we have evidence not just of what this can do for individuals affecting the likelihood of vitality and longevity, but whole populations. The analysis of blue zones by Dan Buettner and others shows us that those people who get these lifestyle practices right at the level of culture live longer than the rest of us and live better than the rest of us. And we even have evidence that lifestyle can work as an intervention at the level of an entire population. In North Karelia, Finland, in the middle of the 20th century, they had the highest rates of premature death from coronary disease anywhere in the world. And using the principles of lifestyle as medicine at the level of community and population, they have reduced the rates of heart disease in North Karelia by 82% in the decade since, and added an average of 10 years to life expectancy. It's critical to note here that there is nothing else in all of biomedicine. There is nothing for which a Nobel Prize in medicine has ever been awarded that can as reliably add years to lives, life to years, and, by the way, help address the critical issues of our planet's health all at the same time, because changes in diet, physical activity conducive to human health are also conducive to stabilizing our climate, preserving water, protecting biodiversity, and everything else that needs to matter to us all. Well, the simple fact is that for health professionals not addressing lifestyle medicine, they're at the margins of what matters, no matter what other contributions they're making in medicine. And as an internist myself, I fully respect the honorable calling of disease care, but there is a critical need for universal attention to lifestyle in clinical practice and lifestyle as medicine at the level of populations. In order for that to happen, in order for us to transform what is a disease care system into a genuine health care system, too, we need practice to change, so we have to raise awareness and teach new methods, and we need systems changes. After all, it took Dean Ornish, after he developed a lifestyle intervention to reverse coronary artery disease, 19 years to get Medicare coverage for that. And we all know that Medicare reimbursement for coronary bypass happened a lot faster. So there's a strong cultural focus on medical interventions and a prevailing neglect of lifestyle as medicine, even though it has the far greater power to improve medical destinies. This new curriculum is in the service of advancing that proposition. And to talk about it in more detail, I pass the baton to my predecessor as president of the American College of Lifestyle Medicine and the principal architect of the new curriculum, Dr. Liana Leonov.
Thank you, David. It has been an incredible opportunity to serve as the faculty for this wonderful and groundbreaking curriculum. Today, physicians treat first with medications, yet, as David just eloquently summarized, the key is to get at the root cause of disease in order to reverse it and actually prevent it from occurring in the first place. How does a physician or how does anyone working on a team in a healthcare system, healthcare environment, do this? Well, we convened a blue ribbon panel of national organization representatives a number of years ago in 2009 to answer this question and came up with a consensus statement that pointed to 15 core competencies that are absolutely crucial. These are skills and knowledge that every physician and the supporting team, other healthcare providers, need to be implementing in order to offer high-quality lifestyle medicine services. Folks then said, how do we get these skills and how do we get this knowledge? And that led to the development of the curriculum that we're releasing today. This is a full 30-hour continuing medical education program, and it offers a deep dive into nutrition, physical activity, weight management, sleep, stress reduction, coaching behaviors, which is absolutely the foundation to getting everyone moving on the spectrum of towards healthy behaviors, and much more. It's been now offered internally to our organizational members in some of the early programs have been very exciting, including a program at Cummins Corporation that's being offered to the in-house medical professionals there who are offering services to over 50,000 employees worldwide, and you'll be hearing more about that from Dexter Cherney in a couple of minutes. As our healthcare scene is evolving and payment systems in healthcare are evolving, we are more and more looking to emphasize prevention and to look to maintain overall patient wellness and health. And so physicians and others are going to be looking for reliable ways to prevent, treat, and reverse these lifestyle-related chronic diseases. And that absolutely means that we need to be very effective and efficient at offering personalized interventions that are designed to improve nutrition, physical activity, lower stress, improve sleep, and provide all of the support that patients need to be successful with healthy lifestyles. For providers and administrators who are financially incentivized by CMS, for example, through the Physician Quality Reporting Program, they are looking to do exactly this to keep their patients and populations healthy. And lifestyle medicine methodologies are a very effective and low-cost way to address these underlying root causes, these underlying risks to these chronic diseases. However, of course, even as we recognize this and physicians recognize the importance of a healthy lifestyle, that doesn't mean that it's very intuitive about how to go about doing that with patients, how to integrate that into practice. And that's what makes this curriculum so groundbreaking and absolutely important is the outlining those steps of how to implement this into practice. And to tell you a little bit more about firsthand experience in doing this, I'd like to turn this over to Dr. Wayne Deisinger, who's a physician and a CEO of Lifestyle Medicine Solutions. Take it over, Wayne.
Thank you, Liana. I just want to give a little background. I'm trained in family medicine and preventive medicine and have spent most of my life in academia. During that period of time, I did help develop this curriculum and wrote some of the modules specifically around nutrition and reviewed everything for scientific accuracy and balance, and feel like we have a great curriculum that will help clinicians better understand lifestyle medicine and better practice lifestyle medicine. But over the last couple years, I've moved from academia into a private practice. So right now I spend 80% of my time seeing patients and trying to help patients move through lifestyle change myself. And the reason I did this is because I recognized that this lifestyle medicine movement needed more examples of physicians who are actually practicing it. The typical physician, as we've already talked about, is not trained in nutrition and some of the lifestyle medicine modalities. And there are definitely skills and experiences that physicians need to acquire if they're really going to practice lifestyle medicine, which is what this curriculum is about. So, As a practicing physician, we do things very differently in lifestyle medicine. So for instance, the typical physician, when they come in, they tend to think of their patients as a list of diagnoses and a list of medications. That's what the electronic medical record set up, and that's how we tend to view our patients. For a lifestyle medicine physician, we look at our patients much more holistically, where we try to understand the social context of their lives. We try to understand the stressors that are there. How are they sleeping? How are they eating? What's their physical activity like? Those are the things that are important for us. And then when we sit down and try to develop a treatment plan, we start again with those root lifestyle issues. So if someone is sleeping poorly and stressed out all the time, it's going to be very hard to get their blood pressure better. So if we work on that area, if they're eating, for instance, a lot of cheese, it's going to be very hard to get their cholesterol down. So we focus on that rather than just throwing a statin medication at them. And those are the kinds of things that we do to start off our treatment. We also bring in a variety of other resources. So the coaching resources that Liana talked about that help with health behavior change, the concept of actually sitting down with patients as a group and working through group visits with them, because we know that health behavior change happens best in community and in group. So those are the kinds of things that we're trying to do and that we're implementing in our practice here, and that the curriculum is helping other physicians to implement across the country. And what all of this does, I believe, is that it takes us to a place where we can actually be good at reimbursement for results. Right now, too much of the healthcare system is built around reimbursement for volume or for procedures. And lifestyle medicine and the type of practice that this curriculum is supporting is about reimbursement for results. I just want to give one quick patient story, just to give you an example. So I had a patient, this was about 4 months ago, a 55-year-old lady who came in, had been recently diagnosed as a diabetic. She'd gone to the ER. She'd been started on 4 different medications, 3 for diabetes, 1 for her blood pressure. And she came into our office, and she was just frantic. She was scared. She didn't know what to do. She felt like she'd been given some type of death sentence. I was able to sit down with her and get to know her in that holistic, comprehensive way that I talked about. And she was able to develop a trust in me. And then I was able to start prescribing specific foods that she should eat, specific foods that she shouldn't eat, some exercise, some social support systems. And over the course of 3 months, she went from a hemoglobin A1C that was 11.6, which is very high, normal is less than 5.7, down to a hemoglobin A1C that was 5.9. So she wasn't quite in the normal range, but she was down in that pre-diabetic range rather than the diabetic range. And during this time, we also got her off of all of her medications. She just had half a dose of one of her diabetes medications. So she had dramatic improvement in her clinical results. She got off of her medication. She was losing weight. And the last time I saw her, which was about a month ago, she was just ebullient. She was happy. She was energetic. She was ready to continue on in her life. So she'd gone from this terrible place to this wonderful place in a relatively short period of time, and that's the promise of lifestyle medicine. That's what we're trying to get out there as an option for every physician and for every patient. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Dexter Cherney. Dexter Cherney's been mentioned before. He's the Chief Medical Director and Executive Director for Global Health and Wellness at Cummins Incorporation, which is a Fortune 500 company. Go ahead, Dexter.
Thank you, Wayne. Appreciate it. So we're really excited about this whole endeavor, and we've been a part of this since the beginning. And really, we're thrilled when the American College of Lifestyle Medicine, the American College of Preventive Medicine, joined forces to develop this curriculum. And we decided to be one of the early adopters of this. Cummins, as some of you may know, we're a large manufacturer. We manufacture diesel engines. And one of the things that we pride ourselves on is really being innovative in everything that we do. So as we manufacture things, we try to be innovative. And when our leadership group was looking at, what can we do in healthcare to really start to move the needle, we had done as much as we thought we could do in terms of benefit design and wellness programs, the typical wellness programs. We started to look around to see what else could we do. And we kept coming back to lifestyle was really something that we needed to pay more attention to. And as being a manufacturing organization, one of the things that we really look at is root cause. You know, what is the root cause to any issues that we're having on the manufacturing floor or with the design of our engines? And so as we looked at healthcare, we really were looking at, well, what is the root cause of poor health? And obviously, as most of you know, it really stems to a person's lifestyle. And so if we were really going to be innovative and do something different, then we really had to tackle the whole issue of lifestyle, and that's really where we set our sights. And so this curriculum that's been developed, it really falls right in line with that. And so we have been using this with our clinicians that are inside of our clinics, and we've really received some remarkable results. The clinic that's our largest clinic, which is located in Columbus, Indiana, we've required that all of our primary care physicians go through the 30-hour curriculum. We opened that particular clinic. It's a relatively new clinic. It's 28,000 square feet and 46 providers, as well as primary care physicians in that particular facility. They've all gone through the program. We launched in June, and we're already seeing remarkable results, very similar to what Wayne just described. We're seeing patients that were being able to come completely off of their cholesterol-lowering medications. Still a little early for some of the diabetes results that we're looking for, but even today we have results of certain patients where we've been able to reduce the dose by half. Some have come off of their insulin. They still may be on some oral meds. But these are really exciting early preliminary results for us that we're finding with this application within this particular clinic. The other thing that we've done with the curriculum is that we have a high-performance network that we have designed within our health carriers network of providers. And one of the prerequisites that we require requirements that we have for participating in that network is that they also go through some of this learning within the curriculum. Not the full 30 hours, but a portion of that. And so we have over 500 providers now in that network that have gone through the curriculum as well, or at least in the process of doing so. So that's very encouraging as well, because that way, when we refer outside of our clinics into our high-performance network, there's a consistent conversation that occurs among those physicians, the referring physicians, and those that are treating the patients, that everyone understands what we're really trying to do with lifestyle. The other thing I'll say is that because of the phenomenal results that we expect to get and actually are starting to achieve, we've actually changed some of the metrics. that we use to measure success within our clinics. We actually have something that we call a lifestyle medicine index that really tracks things like BMI, cholesterol, glucose, blood pressure in a different way that we can actually then measure the change time one over time two in terms of how this is affecting the health status of those patients that are attributed to our particular clinics. And I should just back up and say that these are patient-centered medical home clinics. So it's not the typical on-site clinic. These are clinics where actually patients can come, they sign up for a primary care doctor, and they can receive most of their care there. And as Wayne said, we also have coaches and the ancillaries there to actually deliver a full-scale lifestyle medicine approach. And, of course, one of the other metrics, going back to metrics that we're looking for, is the percent reversal of type 2 diabetes. And so we're targeting a 10% reduction in our identified type 2 diabetics as one of our performance measures within our clinics. And it looks like we're on a pretty good start, given what we're already seeing with patients being able to come off of insulin and reduce the dosages that are there. So we'll keep that in front of us as we go forward and look for these metrics down the road. So with that, I'll give it back to Danny.
Thank you so much, Dr. Cherney. Tony, before I make a couple of quick announcements, can I turn it over to you to remind our audience about the question and answer session and how to get in the queue?
Absolutely. If you would like to ask a question or make a comment, simply press star and one on your touch-tone telephone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, simply press the pound key. Again, that's star and one to ask your question.
Great. Thank you. And so while participants may be thinking if they want to ask any questions or make any comments, let me just say that after this call is done, ACPM and ACLM will be issuing a press release this afternoon about the curriculum, so you can be watching for that. If you, as RSVPing for this call, you will get a follow-up email with the press release, a recording of this call, and information about how to sign up for various ACPM and ACLM newsletters that will keep you informed about the Lifestyle Medicine Core Competencies curriculum. So with that, Tony, I can turn it back over to you for question and answer.
Perfect. Again, that is star and one if you'd like to ask your question. Meanwhile, we'll move to Joyce Frieden. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you. I'm wondering if there's any intent to introduce the curriculum into medical schools and also how you might develop it for the solo or small practice that might not have a lot of ancillary personnel on hand to do some of the coaching.
Sure. Dr. Liana Leonov, should we start with you for that question and then maybe open it up to other speakers if you want to weigh in?
Sure. This particular curriculum is targeted at practicing physicians and offers continuing medical education for practicing physicians, but of course, our up-and-coming physicians and medical students and residents need this kind of training. And there's an entire movement that's working to develop resources for medical students and residents that we can certainly share with you. But even with this curriculum that's initially designed for practicing clinicians, we are working with some medical colleges and residencies to make it available as well. So that's a perfect question. And if that was part one of your question. Part two is also crucial that some clinicians are in solo practice and really need the assistance of teams, particularly the coaching aspect that takes time, and they need to be looking to others in the community and other resources. So we do address that to some extent within the curriculum in a broad sense, And then every practitioner who is interested in practicing lifestyle medicine may need to look at what the local resources are to connect with those. It might be a patient's worksite wellness program, the local health departments sometimes have programs, faith-based organizations have programs that are really doing more hand-holding or potentially can do more hand-holding of patients who need that assistance as they're being coached into a healthier lifestyle. So thank you for that question.
Sure, thank you.
And before we go on to the next question, are there any other speakers that would like to comment?
Danny, this is Dan Blumenthal. I wanted to comment on that one as well, speaking from the perspective of somebody who taught medical students over 35 years. And I think this is something that really belongs in the medical school curriculum, even though it was designed initially with practicing physicians in mind. By the time one becomes a senior in medical school or moves into a residency program, you're certainly ready. A student or a resident is certainly ready to engage in this sort of learning exercise. And as I mentioned in my initial remarks, this is something that has not been taught well in medical schools in the past, so this is a real opportunity for faculty who actually don't know how to do this very well to learn and pass on what they then learn to medical students or have the students or the residents go through the curriculum themselves.
And Danny, David Katz here. I'm going to append briefly to Dan's comments, although there are pretty much aligned with what I wanted to say, also from the perspective of teaching medical students at Yale for many years and being a residency director at one point. So two key comments, both I think lend support to the idea of this curriculum for clinicians in practice and then a subsequent movement into the formal structures of medical education. The first is a famous mantra about medical education. We all recite it on the ward, see one, do one, teach one. And what that suggests is if you never see one, you're never going to do one. In other words, we really do need clinicians who are out there, the leadership, embracing lifestyle medicine. Because ultimately, when you go through the completion of your in-class training in medical school and other health professionals training, it becomes an apprenticeship. You know, you move out into practice settings, and you really do learn what you see done. So it's really critical to initiate change there. The other big challenge, of course, and I presume you know this asking the question, to gain an understanding of lifestyle medicine practice at mid-career is entirely discretionary. To fit it into medical school requires a shoehorn. You know, there's extreme turf battles over, you know, making room for anything because you have to essentially move something out to move something in. The American College of Lifestyle Medicine is actually directly involved now in the early stages of a national initiative to address these very elements, lifestyle medicine, in credentialing and the standardized testing that medical students are subject to, and the credentialing of medical schools, because change there most reliably translates into curricular change. So I agree entirely with Dan. I think there's a need. I also think there's an opportunity, and I think it's timely. But I do think it makes sense to start with the clinicians in practice and then migrate this into the formal structures of medical education.
So this is Wayne Dicing. I feel compelled to step in as well, because part of the question was about practicing clinicians, and that is what I am now. And the reason I'm doing this now is because I was one that was trying to teach one, and I recognized that we needed to see one before we could do one and teach one. So the only comment I want to make is that we have to have reimbursement for results or value-based healthcare reimbursement for lifestyle medicine to really thrive. And luckily, we're getting that. That's some of the pushes for the Affordable Care Act are that direction. The new MIPS and MACRA recommendations that are coming out from CMS will continue to move us along that direction. So this kind of thing is the time is now. The lifestyle medicine that we're talking about, the reimbursement models are coming. I have to say, again, trying to make money out in private practice, it's hard to get there now, but there are certain reimbursement mechanisms that already work fairly well for lifestyle medicine, and we really believe that more will be on the way. So it's a something in progress, but it's going the right direction.
Great. Thank you to all the speakers that answered the question. I think, Tony, we're ready for the next question.
Very good. That question will come from Ashwani Garg. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you. I had a two-part question. Number one is, how are we able to obtain MOC credits for the core curriculum? And the other part is, in the future, is there talk of a CAQ in lifestyle medicine?
Sure. So this is Dani Perry with ACPM, and ACPM does offer both CME and maintenance of certification for all 30 hours, so that is provided. Does a speaker want to take the second part of the question?
Sure. This is Wayne Deisinger, and I'm actually the chair of the American Board of Lifestyle Medicine. That's an organization that is sponsored both by ACPM and ACLM, as well as the European and Australian lifestyle medicine organizations, and its goal is to develop a certification in lifestyle medicine so that we can actually differentiate someone who says they're practicing lifestyle medicine and someone who is actually applying an evidence-based scientific approach to lifestyle medicine, because there's a lot of people out there that start using terms but aren't really practicing in the evidence-based ways that we really believe should be practiced. So that certification is under development. We expect it to be available in the fall of 2017, so just about a year from now. It won't be a CAQ as such. From a American Board of Medical Specialties perspective, you have to build momentum and sort of gather resources to actually apply for a CAQ, but it will be in preparation for that, and at least there will be this differentiating capability again about a year from now.
Thank you.
Great, thank you. Thank you. And next we'll move to Kimberly Loomer. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Kim with the Medical College of Georgia. I wanted to revisit just for a second the opportunity to put this in undergraduate medical education. What would be the process for those of us who may want to be an early adopter or first adopter at the UME level?
Sure. So thanks for the question, Kimberly. This is Dani Perry with the American College of Preventive Medicine. So the curriculum is actually available to anyone that wants it, and you're able to access it through our e-learning portal. So it is out today, I think I'll let others comment to this, but it would be more of a process of working with your institution to see how it would be delivered. The actual content itself is all digitized on an e-learning portal, and I'll let others comment or maybe some examples of other medical schools that are heading this direction.
Well, this is Dan Blumenthal again. So the process at a medical school usually involves developing probably an elective with goals and objectives and syllabus and so forth, and this online curriculum would be a significant part of that. You could build the entire elective around this and then submitting it to your curriculum committee and having it approved. I'm sure that every medical school has a somewhat unique process, but that's the general sort of procedure.
Okay. Thank you. I was aware with our COC procedures, but just didn't know if there was any special permissions or anything we needed from the two institutes putting this together. So I appreciate it.
Welcome.
Thank you. And once again, to ask a question, please press star and one on your touchtone telephone. Meanwhile, we'll move to Teresa Larson. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. I'm just wondering if your speakers, your guests, can comment a little bit further on reimbursement that was brought up a while ago. I know that it is getting more attention and progress, but as far as right now, maybe specifically, what are the ways, for example, patients who are receiving coaching for lifestyle medicine, how can they be reimbursed, or what, is it actually feasible for private coaching or ancillary coaching services?
Sure. Thank you for the question. So others may want to weigh in, but Wayne, since you're on the front line practicing right now, did you want to start off with any comments?
So we are being reimbursed a variety of different ways. If you go to the traditional fee-for-service reimbursement model, we use the primary codes that most physicians use. We diagnose people with hyperlipidemia and with prediabetes and with whatever other chronic diseases they're up against. And then we bill 99213s, 99214s for our patients who have insurance. We find that less than ideal. We think the incentives are aligned poorly, and we're incentivized to have quick visits, and we think lifestyle medicine is done best outside of that kind of format. But you can be reimbursed that way, and there's now new chronic disease reimbursements. We haven't really gone that direction a whole lot, but the point is the current mechanisms do work some for lifestyle medicine. We find the thing that's most valuable for us right now is actually working with Medicare Advantage programs. Medicare Advantage programs are fully reimbursement for results, so they're a per member per month or a capitated system. And it pays us to have coaches and dietitians and that type of thing to spend time working with the patients, because we know that if that patient does better, and it depends on your contract with the Medicare Advantage programs, but we found some that are willing to contract with us. So really, we're highly incentivized to keep the patient well, and that's what we want, and that's what we seek out. So that's really our best sort of new model reimbursement mechanism right now, is with Medicare Advantage programs. But we have a few others too, and without going into a lot of detail, some of the medical sharing. So there's several medical sharing companies out there that aren't insurance, but they're like insurance from an Obamacare perspective. And there's some incentives within those systems that we're working with that we think help us as well. Plus, there's still private pay, so there's some people that will just recognize the value of this and pay for that. But we find that that's a minority of patients that are really willing to do that. So those are some of the things that we're working with.
Does another speaker want to weigh in?
This is Dexter. Another way that you might approach it is through a payer. So large employers such as the employer I work for, we're self-funded, which means we have control over how we want benefits to be paid and for what we want to pay for. And so that's essentially what we've done with our on-site clinics, is that we are using our self-funds to actually pay for a lifestyle practice that really incentivizes the providers to keep our patients healthy. It is not really based on how many procedures are done. It's based on how healthy the population stays and becomes. And so that's really the tenets of lifestyle medicine. So if there's an opportunity to partner with one of those kinds of payers, whether it's a large employer or someone else, to help you do that, then that could be a path forward as well. And the other thing is that some of you are working for large employers as well, even in the healthcare space. So it could be that a large hospital system then might find a way to pay for these kinds of services for their own employees, which I think really serves two purposes. One, it allows you to actually get some experience in doing this before you go out to the broader market, and it would also actually help you with keeping your own employees healthy. So that could be a way to do that as well.
Great. Thanks, Dexter. Tony, do we have any more questions?
At this time, we have no further questions, but as a reminder, if you'd like to ask your question or make a comment, simply press star and one on your touchtone telephone. We'll pause momentarily to allow further questions to queue. And it appears we have no further questions at this time.
Great. Thanks, Tony. Well, let me just thank all of our speakers for their presentations today. And let me thank all of you for participating and the great questions that you asked. Once again, in participating in this call, you will receive an email in a couple of hours with the press release, a link to the recording of this conference call, and again, more information about how you can access and view the Lifestyle Medicine Core Competencies. So thank you again for everyone joining us today, and we look forward to talking and hearing from you and working with you on the Lifestyle Medicine Core Competency Curriculum.